Chapter 9. Assassination. 824.M30. Locos, Olympia.
They are marvellous, brother, said Caliphany.
The balcony of Caliphany's apartments jutted far out from the side of the palace of Locos on layered corbels of stone, overlooking the Plataea Stratiotis. On the neatly sectioned decorative paving of the parade ground below, the army of Perturabo gathered. Amid the squares of soldiers awaiting inspection by Damocos, 36 war machines of Perturabo's own design idled their engines. Their insignia were freshly painted on newly minted armoured hulls. Broad linked tracks vibrated with the energy of powerful engines.
They are nothing,
Perturabo said, without false modesty. He knew he could do better.
I did what I could with what we have available here. They are better than the steam landships the other cities have, said Caliphany.
Thank you, he said, genuinely pleased. His foster sister's opinion was one of the few he cared about. They will bring us victory. Victory will bring more resources. More resources will mean better machines, and that will lead to
more victory,
she said, resting her hand on his arm. Her head was level with his elbow, and she had to reach up to touch him.
You've proven your worth in battle more than once, brother. It is about time Father allowed you to apply that formidable mind of yours to strategy. But, and I ask you gently because I do not want to offend you, is this war wise?
Only Caliphany could question him so openly without annoying him, though her need to cosset his temper did irritate. Cardis will attack us. Their recent ostentatious protestations of alliance make me all the more suspicious that it will be sooner rather than later.
They may have been sincere, she said.
Below, Optios and Decurions yelled out as Damocos walked down a thickly carpeted stair into the square. The thunder of polished boots echoed from the walls of the palace, startling birds into flight. She pulled back from the balustrade and walked to the couch set at its rear. Food and drink were set out for them there, under an awning of coloured silk. She dipped a taster into the wine, another device made by her foster brother, and consulted the dial. Satisfied it was untainted, she removed the device and ladled a measure into her goblet.
It is a dangerous course of action. If we attack them,
she shrugged. When we attack them, Caliphany, said Perturabo. You will not convince me otherwise. Damocos is eager.
When then? Tomorrow you will plunge all of Pelicotonia into war. It will spread from here. No one will trust us. We will have no alliances.
It is only dangerous if we lose, he countered. And we will not lose. Cardis has access to the only substantial supply of copper on this continent. If we can take it, it will enable me to build far more potent machines than those armoured vehicles in the square. Imagine if every one of our warriors were equipped with a lightning gun instead of a rifle. Armour would be useless. The walls of many cities would become obsolete overnight.
From Cardis, then where?
Asked Caliphany. Perturabo stared down at his troops as his lord went among them, examining their uniforms and weaponry. They were technically Damocus's troops, but the proprietorial way he walked between their lines rankled the future Primarch.
There are other elements that can be made into even mightier weapons, he said after a pause.
Perturabo measured his words carefully, unsure of how much to reveal.
Elements with a certain quality of facility. Rare elements. The ancients stripped this planet of most of its resources. They were disproportionately interested in fissile elements. If I can acquire enough, I will build a weapon of such awful potency that it will end war on Olympia forever. Really? She said archly. You are so clever.
As with so much human interaction, Perturabo was impervious to humour when he was thinking deeply, unless he felt overly mocked and his temper came into play. When he used humour, it was rarely spontaneous, but deployed like a weapon in a planned attack. He continued, deadly serious. In a hidden library, I learned much that you would be wise to read.
You're so pleased with digging up that old ruin, she said. 7 years ago now. It's time you found yourself a new achievement to crow about. You dismiss it too lightly. Still, he watched Damocles. You should read the books I found there.
Who says I haven't? She said coyly.
Perturabo finally turned to face her. She plucked a grape from a bunch with her lips.
The information you recovered from the city has revolutionized life here. Anyone with half a mind should read it. And I have.
He smiled at that, pleased. Damocles does not approve of wise women. He never called the tyrant father. Caliphany made a little face of unconcern.
You're not the only secretive one in our family, though you do it so well.
Perturabo was thoughtful. It is true that court life breeds a certain reticence. You would have thought my nature would have been a natural fit for circumstances here, but instead it sets me even further apart from you. Caliphany threw a grape at her foster brother's head.
If anything, Beau, your problem is that you exemplify the worst of our Olympian virtues. Introspective, secretive, paranoid, and superior.
It was all true, though she meant it without malice. Beau was another thing he allowed her. No other would dare to shorten his name. He smiled at her guardedly. Of all his relatives at court, she was the only one he had anything approaching a friendship with. But he did not trust her, and so true affection remained tantalizingly out of reach. Theirs was a common bond formed by adversity. Both were secretly rueful, it was so, for both craved real companionship. However, neither could do anything about it, and so, like all in Locos, they played the parts expected of them in the great tragedy of life.
Will it work?
She said. She poured a second cup of wine for him, making a show she didn't care. Her cup would be thimble-sized in his enormous hands, so she filled one for him large enough to be used as a bucket. Yes, of course it will. I have a strategy. It cannot fail. Damocles thinks I will do all this for Locos, but I'm not doing it for this city. I go to war for Olympia. There are other worlds than this one, Caliphany, and we are vulnerable while we are divided. What if the Black Judges return? Or others? We must be ready.
The Black Judges are a legend, she said. The Dark Brothers of the Gods. They watch over us, so the priests say, in return for the blood of the young.
You know they are no legend. A visit from them is well overdue. She shuddered.
I prefer to pretend they are not real.
Pretend or not, you cannot deny their existence. He walked from the balustrade and took his wine from the table. Even if you could make a case for their non-existence, you must agree it would be better to stand united and ready to repel them, just in case.
You are spinning unattainable dreams, brother, she said. You are mighty, but such as the Black Judges would crush you even if you had every satrapy and city-state by your side.
Maybe, he said. He drained his goblet. It was five times the size of hers, but no matter how much he drank, he was never affected by the alcohol. Better to dream and fail than honour this poisonous status quo. Whoever I am, I was made for more than such a petty realm as Olympia.
You are beginning to believe your own legend.
I do not think for one moment, my little sister, that I am born of the gods. He looked upwards past the edge of the awning. Threads of smoke from Olympia's industries rose into the sky, rolling over where warmer air interfaced with colder layers, leaving the high heavens clear. Behind the matchless blue, he could discern the queasy revolution of the star maelstrom. He looked at it as long as he dared, defying its baleful presence. But I am not from Olympia. Of that I am sure.
Well,
she said, bringing the discussion to a close. She lifted the ewer.
Empty. You drink so much. I'm fetching myself some more wine.
Perturabo made to rise. Let me go.
Oh, no,
she said, smiling.
You are not to be gallant. You are going into battle tomorrow. I will play servant.
They had no one in attendance. Servants and peons could not be trusted. All knew that.
But Perturabo went further than most by having none himself and demanding the servants of others be absent when he visited. Another oddity that set him apart from his peers. Caliphany went through the archway into her apartments. Perturabo looked out over the city. His war machines rumbled as their engines turned over. The smell of burning hydrocarbons wafted up from below. For a brief moment, he knew contentment. The most peaceful moments preceded war. He did not yet have the self-knowledge or the courage to acknowledge that he anticipated the coming violence. One day he would admit that killing calmed his troubled heart, and it would sorrow him. A small noise made Perturabo move from the couch. "Caliphany," he called. There was no reply. He listened carefully. Tiny scuffing noises came from inside, the sounds of a silent struggle. Perturabo ran through the archway into her apartments without a moment's delay. A masked warrior had his foster sister about the throat, a knife pricking under her jaw. Two others stood at his side, their swords drawn.
"Take one more step and your sister dies."
"Behind you,"
she screamed. Perturabo turned to see two men leap at him from behind the pilasters of the arch. One he swatted with a backhand that sent the man crashing into a cabinet of ornaments with his ribs shattered. The second plunged his knife in the meat of Perturabo's shoulder. He grunted at the pain and stepped back, wrenching the weapon from the assassin's grasp. Coldness spreading from the wound indicated poison, and he wavered slightly. The knife man leapt back, drawing a solid slug pistol. He fired three shots into Perturabo's chest as he advanced. They did not slow him in the slightest. He reached for the man, who swung recklessly for his head. Grabbing his assailant's skull in one hand, Perturabo picked him up and swung him around like a flail. His feet, flung out by the rapidity of the motion, kicked one of the swordsmen in the face, sending him reeling. The second swordsman struck with his blade. Perturabo blocked it, and it bit into his forearm. Perturabo kicked at the man, breaking his femur so hard that his leg folded backwards. The swordsman screamed and fell. With a twist of his wrist, Perturabo broke the neck of the man whose head he gripped and threw him aside. His body hit the wall halfway to the ceiling, smearing it with blood. The poison made Perturabo woozy, but there was no toxin on Olympia that could fell him. The remaining swordsman charged, screaming war cries of the Thanatoi murder cults. Perturabo sidestepped his blow and punched him so hard that his face caved in. That just left the assassin holding Caliphany.
"No more step," said the man. "Your life for hers."
Perturabo's superhuman system was already shrugging off the effects of the poison and closing up his wounds.
"No,"
he said. "Your life for hers." He plucked the knife buried in his shoulder and cast it with such speed that the assassin had no time to react. It hit him so hard that the hilt buried itself deep in his eye socket and the point burst from the back of his skull. Caliphany pushed his arm aside so that he would not cut her throat as he fell. She rubbed at her neck.
"That one still lives," she managed.
The swordsman with the broken leg was crawling backwards, grasping his shattered limb with his good hand, agonized breath coming sharp through his teeth.
"Did you think that you might best me, Perturabo, in combat? But five of you would be enough?"
Perturabo bent down and grabbed the man by his jerkin and hauled him up. Holding him with one hand, he ripped the mask away from his face, revealing the tattooed face of a Dalconian.
"Who is behind this?" demanded Perturabo.
"Who?"
"I won't talk," said the Dalconian.
"Whoever was paying you, it was not enough. You would be wise to renounce your oaths of silence." The man spat full in Perturabo's face. Bloody saliva slid down Perturabo's cheek. Rage screamed into his mind and his reason fled. Perturabo cast the mask down and began choking the swordsman. The man's face went crimson and his tongue bulged from his mouth.
"Who is behind this?"
repeated Perturabo.
"Who? Who?"
The man gurgled. He might have been trying to talk, but if the noises he made were words, they were incomprehensible.
"You will get nothing from him that way," said Caliphany.
She grabbed Perturabo's arm and pulled. She might as well have tugged at a mountain.
"Stop! Save him for the torturers! Let them draw out the truth!"
Perturabo was not listening.
The pounding of his pulse in his ears drowned out his sister's words. Dark fury had him. His face was tight with it.
Petarabo!
Califini shouted. He looked down at her with a twisted face, and she backed away from his fury. Slowly he came back into himself. The assassin hung limply in his grasp, his throat a bloody ruin. Perturabo's fingers had sunk so deeply into the man's neck that he gripped his spine. Perturabo dropped the corpse.
I'm sorry, he said, swallowing heavily. The danger to us, to you, I lost my temper.
You were right, we should have kept him alive.
We'll never know who sent them now, she said.
Not in any useful time frame, he said. It could have been anyone. Damocos, your brother.
Perturabo,
she said, genuinely shocked.
You cannot say such things.
Is it not the Olympian way to present the iron facade to hide the fractures within? Your own brother would use you to get at me. You know he would.
You cannot prove that. That is a supposition too far, even for you. And father, how could you say that?
Perturabo looked away.
Who planned this is of little consequence, do you see? The power games of the satraps and the tyrants must stop. True peace will come only when our world is united.
Which you would secure through force and treachery.
He looked over the scattered bodies of the assassins.
Treachery your people have taught me well enough. It is only through war that war will end and peace will come.
Oh, my brother, she said. I fear war will find you no matter where you go.
Well, they won't surrender. You know that, Perturabo, said Miltiades.
Perturabo's lips parted and he breathed out with displeasure. His hand tightened on the hilt of his sword.
Use my title, Warlord of Locos. Really? Come on, said Miltiades. I've known you since I plucked you off that cliff.
The two of them stood high on a bluff, overlooking the Cardacran Pass, the only way into the vaulted city. Heavily defended by six sets of walls, each hundreds of meters high, the road made its unhurried way to the city gates of Cardis, seat of the tyrant of Cardicora. They watched, surrounded by their staff, as Perturabo's tanks growled their way towards the first wall. The heavy plates of Perturabo's thick siege armor rasped as he looked down on his lieutenant.
Firstly, I remember that I climbed that cliff on my own, he said. Secondly, you are a soldier in my army now, Optio, and you will use my rank when you address me.
Miltiades worked his jaw and spat. He was getting old. His initial unease at being in Perturabo's presence had worn away through exposure. He no longer feared him, and was of such an age he had no fear of death either.
You don't have to climb every mountain by yourself, warlord,
Miltiades said pointedly.
I can only rely on myself. Nothing else is certain in life but one's own strength. If I relied on the strength of others, then how could others rely on my strength? I am the superior being. I must support you. So yes, I do have to climb every mountain myself.
Others made those things,
Miltiades pointed at the tanks, black on the hard white glare of the sunlit road.
Others are the soldiers in your army. No peak stands alone, not even the tallest. All are parts of mountain chains. And so it is with men. It doesn't matter how much of a genius you are, Perturabo. You can't build every fortress with your own hands.
I am like no other man, said Perturabo.
He returned his attention to his tanks. They had almost reached the Guardian of Cardis, a giant drum tower bristling with guns which stood at one end of the first wall. The two men were silent for the moment.
Besides, Perturabo added, I can think of three peaks that do stand alone on this continent.
Miltiades grinned.
Pedantry is a poor argument. My point is still valid. You will always have to rely on others. You cannot take Cardis on your own, if you can take it at all.
I can take it and I will, said Perturabo firmly.
The tanks rumbled forwards, two abreast. Smoke puffed from the Guardian's long-range batteries. A second later, the sound of their discharge reached Perturabo and Miltiades, a little noise like a cough that rose to a sighing rumble. Plumes of earth heaved up from the road a few metres short of the tanks. The armoured vehicles continued forwards.
"Well, they've ranged their guns well," said Miltiades. "They've had plenty of practice to get it right. Can we claim the same? Your marvellous landships are going to take a battering."
"You do not allow for my understanding that fact and preparing for it."
"Which means?"
"Thicker armour, better metal, more powerful engines." "You're going to be eating those words soon enough," said Perturabo.
He narrowed his eyes. A tank was hit directly. It rolled onwards, trailing fire from its armoured surfaces. Perturabo gave a curt nod to his orderlies. A flag-bearer stood to attention at the edge of the cliff and raised two pennants. A round exploded from the cliff below them.
"Well, they've seen us," said Miltiades. "That doesn't mean they can hit us," snarled Perturabo,
annoyed now by the man's constant gainsaying. The orderly waved his flags in a stiff pattern, the fabric snapping in the cool mountain breeze. A handful of moments later, the distant thunder of artillery echoed up the pass. The air whistled with the passage of shells. They banged into the side of the Guardian, the walls of the great tower erupting with stone and fire. The tower guns continued their barrage of the approaching tanks.
"Well, I admit they do move fast," said Miltiades, watching the tanks. "Better than steam. Why won't you tell me what you're doing? You can't break the tower with bombardment. I don't care how powerful you've made the guns."
"Watch. Learn," replied Perturabo.
"You will understand, along with everyone else, what you are dealing with soon enough." Now the tanks were in range. Cannons on the wall joined fire with those of the tower. Men lining the parapet shot armor-killing rockets from crude shoulder launchers. These were made as counter to more primitive steam-driven vehicles, but they were fired in great numbers. One of the tanks exploded, finally giving in to the pounding the tower and walls were meeting out to them. The tank following shunted its burning carcass aside in increments until it was leaned up against the steep slopes of the road. Several of them were wreathed in fire now, but still operational. Another stopped dead, black smoke gouting from the round hole punched through its top armour. The tanks arrayed themselves around the low gate of the first wall and began to pound it at point-blank range with their hull-mounted cannons. Sectioned cannon barrels recoiled like telescopes slamming shut. Exhaust gases vented from muzzle ports, fogging the valley. Perturabo watched impassively. Men were dying there, it was true, and more than the ritualized customs of war prevalent upon Olympia would ordinarily allow. But his plan would work. Shells rained onto the fat drum of the Guardian. They were landing close to his tanks, but he had sighted the pieces himself and given detailed and strict instructions to his artillerists, the famed Stor Bezashk of Lokos. For the moment, they were adhering to the letter of his commands, and every shell they flung slammed into the tower. Miltiades had at last fallen silent. Perturabo knew he was thinking about the thickness of the Guardian's walls and how well designed the massive steel gates of the pass fortifications were. He was probably close to voicing those thoughts. Perturabo really wished he wouldn't. He wanted the old warrior to do more than watch. He wanted him to see his worth, to see how his plan would overcome their old ally and open the continent to the domination of Lokos. He did not want his opinions on failure. Perturabo admitted to himself that he wanted to impress Miltiades. He resolved to push such emotions away in future. They were distracting and therefore dangerous. The tanks were obscured by a haze of dust, smoke, and fire, but the hollow ringing of shells on the steel gate continued. Perturabo ran through his calculations again. The gate was almost a meter thick and made in one piece in the mills of the Kontoros. It was lipped all the way around and on both sides by perfectly fitted stone. The wall masonry was carved and set in such a way that each part locked into the other, the pressure of the stone itself making a hole from many components. The gates were stronger than the walls. It would have been safer to bombard them from afar, one at a time, until they were all rubble. but he needed to win a war, not a battle. Destroying the gates would send a message, as would a speedy conquest. Drawn-out sieges multiplied strategic risk, even if they lessened tactical danger. He needed the fear of his enemies more than he needed his men alive. He supposed he should feel regret for their inevitable deaths, and had been ready to stamp down hard on the feeling. With a certain amount of concern, he found he did not need to, for he felt no remorse whatsoever. The booming of shell on steel suddenly changed, rising in pitch, becoming ragged. "The gate is breached," Perturabo said. "Our men will be through shortly." He nodded at his ensign again. The man waved out another round of orders. From screens set out across the road further down, trucks began to drive quickly up.
"What are you doing?" said Miltiades in alarm. "You can't send them into that cauldron."
"I can, and I have," said Perturabo coldly.
"Then you've killed most of them."
"Their deaths are the means to an end." The first trucks entered the firing zone at full speed. Several were immediately destroyed.
"They are men, not munitions, damn it," said Miltiades. "There is no sense in victory if we all die achieving it."
"Every living thing is a tool in the right hands," said Perturabo without looking at him. "And with them I shall fashion peace so that no others must die. Can you not see?"
"This is not the Olympian way," said Miltiades.
"It is not," said Perturabo. "I will break Olympia and remake it better and stronger."
"This world is not your plaything."
"I am not playing a game." With a screeching yawn, the gates gave in. Thick white smoke billowed outwards. The tanks advanced into the gate tunnel through a storm of fire flashing from the walls. Murder holes opened, and more flashes and bangs echoed from the gate tunnel as the defenders dropped bombs on Perturabo's vehicles. They emerged, all of them, into the ground, spreading the first wall from the second. Olympian technology was held back by a lack of resources rather than knowledge. Perturabo's ingenuity had found a way around this, creating novel alloys and engineering solutions that advanced Locos's weaponry far beyond that of its enemies. This was a good thing, because with the unprovoked attack on Cardis, they now had a great many foes. Automated heavy-caliber machine guns emerged from the tank's hulls, cutting down the defenders coming into the square. Horns blared, and the second gate dropped down, blocking the way once more. Troop compartments opened. Hundreds of men of Locos poured out of the backs of the tanks and ran for the first wall. They went within and began a slaughter of the defenders. The flicker of lightning guns lit up the clouds of battle. There were 300 of these precious weapons in the arsenal of Locos. Perturabo had emptied it before he had left. The cannon fire from the wall subsided. Perturabo's tanks began to fire upon the second gate. Protected by the first wall from the Guardian, they could fight in relative safety, weathering only the attentions of the troops manning the second wall. The surviving trucks had reached the first wall, and they sped into the courtyard, disgorging their passengers. Dragging ladders from the sides of their vehicles, the men mounted an escalade on the second wall under the cover of the men in the first, dividing the defenders' fire. Explosions boomed from the base of the Guardian as the men of Locos attempted to blast their way in through the reinforced doors of its supply tunnels. Fighting broke out along the parapet of the second wall. All was proceeding to Perturabo's plan, as precise as the workings of his clockwork models.
"Send orders that the artillery stand down and prepare to move to the first wall," said Perturabo.
A messenger bowed and ran off immediately. The order was also relayed by semaphore.
"It's taking too long to take the Guardian," said Miltiades.
"The guns will be silent within minutes," replied Perturabo.
"It's never been taken," said Miltiades. "Though I admit your plan is working."
"I am not going to take it. I will destroy it so Cardis is aware of our intentions."
"Impressive," said Miltiades grudgingly. "But there are 6 walls in total in the Cardicron Pass. It will take too long to breach them all. The allies of Cardis will soon be on their way here. Many of the other cities are itching for a chance to cast Locos down. There is a danger here, Warlord, that you have done nothing more than give them excuse to destroy us."
"How long do you suppose it will take me to break the walls and take the city?" asked Perturabo. He looked up the pass where 4 more walls joined cliff to cliff, each higher than the last. The pale shapes of the city's bastions were behind, shrouded by the dusty air.
Well, the citadel too? A fortnight? Said Miltiades. I'm being very generous, and assuming you don't run out of men. This assault was reckless.
It was perfectly calculated and played out exactly as I planned. You saw it. I will have this city in my hands within 3 days.
Miltiades shrugged. He didn't seem to care either way. Perturabo smiled to himself. The fighting was subsiding along the first two walls. The rear of each wall was vulnerable to the attentions of the next, but the first courtyard was safe, and his tanks would prevent Cardis from retaking the second. A tremendous explosion blew out from the bottom of the Guardian Tower. Huge pieces of masonry tumbled down the outward face of the fort. The guns were still firing as the whole of the outer side heeled sideways and slipped down the cliff, sending massive chunks of masonry bouncing down the pass like a child's set of blocks kicked over.
Oh, it may be that you proved to be right,
conceded Miltiades. Perturabo cast aside the dead body of Adophis, the tyrant of Cardicora, and sat himself upon the throne. The hall of the tyrant was very different to that of Locos in appearance, its architectural flourishes determined by the local geology and the quirks of the Cardicran national character. In every other way, it was exactly the same. A monument built at stupendous expense to show a tyrant's power. It was a fitting place for Perturabo to exercise his own. Crowds of nobles, generals, and the richest of Cardus's merchants filled the hall. Smoke rose all over the city, the tang of it penetrating even into the tyrant's throne room. Terror added its own acridity to the fug. The nobles' nervous eyes strayed to the tyrant's bloody corpse. Perturabo stared at them, calculating their worth to him. Their deaths would please him. He could not deny it. They were so proud, so arrogant. He had had enough of such hauteur, and though he could not kill all the preening lords of Locus, he could destroy these here. It was in his power to do so. Their deaths would have their own effect on the war he had planned. Some of the cities would capitulate quickly through fear. Others, driven by the same emotion, would have their resolve stiffened. He thought on it while they stood in silence, too cowardly to ask their fate while their city burned around them. The four-hour looting was underway, as custom demanded. Perturabo would let his men sate their desire for trinkets and mayhem. There were precious few other laws of battle that he intended to obey. This was a new kind of war. Clemency or ruthlessness? He could see the merits of both. He sat back in the tyrant's throne. It was so oversized that it fit him perfectly. His bloodied fingers slipped on its armrests. Finally, Perturabo spoke.
You have seen how quickly we overcame you, he said. I sit here wondering upon your fate. I am a proponent of logic. I ponder whether your deaths are more useful to me than your lives.
He paused to let what he was saying sink in. He need not leave it long. They understood full well already.
But not every variable can be inserted into a calculation of war, and I have to ask myself instead, how will I be seen? And, you must wonder, how do I wish to be seen? Logic dictates that I set aside all emotion and make my decisions based on what is verifiable alone. I cannot. I try, but success eludes me. For as much as I strive to leave behind the concerns of the flesh, and as different to you as I am still a man. I have no desire to be a tyrant. I have victory, and no need for vengeance. The war I bring to you unexpectedly and regretfully is prosecuted in the name of a higher ideal, that of peace, not savagery. Some in the crowd made faces of contempt. A couple of them looked as if they would speak. Perturabo spoke louder.
For peace can come from war. Not the short peace that Olympia enjoys, but a long and total peace, where no man needs raise his weapon against another. I speak to you of a new era.
Peace from iron, called an elderly man. That is no peace at all.
It is peace.
Perturabo paused.
You are Antibus of Cardis. I know your books. I know your mind from reading them. You speak, too, from your heart, as I am forced to do now. Your writings have taught me how to do so, and for that I thank you. We understand each other. It behoves me to be merciful. None of you shall die. You shall keep all your offices and properties and such political powers as you possess, but these shall be employed within the greater realm of Lokos.
He proposes satrapy, scoffed Antibus. Listen to him. This goes against all our customs. We are not a minor city, but one of the 12. No more, said Perturabo.
Submit to me, and you shall prosper alongside Lokos. Your men shall serve in our armies. Your minds will be open to us. I will bring you riches and advances in your sciences that you cannot as yet comprehend.
And if we decline,
said Antibus, then I shall kill you all. And after I have wiped your blood from my hands, I will bend all my efforts to tearing this city down, stone by stone, until nothing remains and all its people are gone into slavery.
That is not peace.
Death is the greatest peace of all, said Perturabo. Unending and total. I prefer other kinds, but I can give you death's peace, if that is the peace you would prefer.
Not long after, the flag of Lokos rose over the parapets and broken towers of Cardis. A wealth of scarce minerals was Perturabo's from that moment, and he had such plans for them. The unification of Olympia had begun.